Episode 139. Welcome back. This is Bat and Spider, Chuck and Dale. Weekly. It's a weekly show, everybody.
We do this, folks, every week, whether you like it or not.
It's like, please, somebody notice us. Somebody pick us up. Somebody say something on the internet about us. What are we doing it for? Anyway, this week, we watched a movie called Prime Target. Friend of the show, Print Huffer, says, "Damn it, I watched Prime Target with Angie Dickinson for real."
Wow. Wrong Prime Target. 2 years off, but close. When that review came in, I was like, I gotta watch that Prime Target as well. So,
well, in order to not make Print Huffer feel alone, yeah, we probably have to. Well, somebody has to. I probably won't, but yeah, Chuck, you do that for Print.
I will. Yeah.
Thank you.
I will do that for Print. Thank you, Print.
And on Print's behalf, I'm thanking you in advance. Thank you, Chuck.
Dale, we're off to a rocky start.
We've just been bullshitting for an hour.
I know.
Before hitting record, like, what are we doing? When I tell my wife and kids that I'm going to leave them early so I can get a head start on recording for the show,
yeah,
and then we don't record for an hour, that looks poor in my family's eyes.
When you tell your wife and kids, okay, daddy's going to miss some more of your growing up to go record a podcast about a David Heavener action movie from 1991.
Right. They just
take it.
The them staring at me bleary eyed through tear smeared pupils as I go with my coffee in one hand and my water in the other. Cause the big bucks are rolling in, Chuck.
What are we doing? What movie do we have to cover? Who do we have to have on the show?
Just tell us. I'm going to pose that as a question on Spotify so our 3 Spotify listeners can answer in app. That's going to be perfect for them. Is there anything you'd like to talk about, Chuck, before we steamroll through?
Not really.
No?
No.
Jesus. Okay. Show's over. Show's over. Good job, future Dale, for getting this edit out in record time.
We talked for an hour already. I got nothing.
That's true. I do have, Chuck, yeah, if I may.
Please, you may. Oh my God. I just got...
Yeah, your nipples got hard. I could tell through your thickened insulated flannel shirt.
Butterflies in my loin.
Well,
my loincloth area.
Take everything you know about my recency with video games and throw them out the window. Okay?
Okay.
Because I'm on to something else these past 2 days.
Wow. Destiny 2.
Great guess, but no. I don't know anything about Destiny and its myriad of expansions and currencies that are good for one season. I don't know anything about that.
Mortal Shell.
I don't know what that is.
I just installed that from Xbox Game Pass PC because it looks like a Dark Souls ripoff that apparently people like.
Yeah. Good luck.
Thanks. I'll probably play for 45 minutes and uninstall it. Dale, what are you playing?
The beauty. Okay, well, here, I'm going to tell you, Chuck. I'm talking about 2015's Game of the Year, Chuck. I'm back in it. I'm back in it.
2015. He's going through his catalog. He's picking off Xbox One discs off the pile in the corner of his room.
You're triangulating.
2015. Oh.
Triangulating, Chuck.
It's not coming to me. I don't know. Just say it. Say it.
Bethesda's Fallout 4.
Oh, wow.
I'm back in the wastes right now.
I should have known.
And I'm telling you, Chuck, I sent you the Zoom link to this podcast recording tonight. And I said, you know what? When I say code, when the code I throw out to you is take your time, no rush, that means, Chuck, don't join this Zoom. Let's cancel recording and possibly put off the podcast for a couple months while I, because the impulsivity in my bones, I feel, happens sometimes. And right now it's happening for Fallout 4. I'm back in with a new character, with a new mission. For the first time ever, I am building out the Commonwealth settlements. I'm letting Preston Garvey boss me around so I can establish new points for settlers who need a safe haven. They need to come to my settlements and start farming and working the till and working the guard posts and set up something for themselves so they can feel like they are contributing and are a member of a new society, whereas before they were afraid of feral ghouls and raiders. But Denby, the vault survivor,
okay,
is something new for them. It's a new person for them to put their trust into. And I'm going to see that the people's happiness.
It sounds to me like you're a landowner, you're a landlord. Is that what's happening? Are you charging these people money?
Chuck, these people need happiness. They need safety. They need security. Okay.
Well, what do you get out of it?
Denby, the vault survivor from Vault 111.
Yeah.
Provides.
Now these provides. Vaults. You know, I've been hearing the word vaults around this Fallout game for decades now. What is it? What's the deal here? So it's post-apocalyptic and some people went into vaults? Is that what you're saying?
Out. All right. You're pissed at me.
No, I'm not.
You're pissed at me. You're pissed at the franchise now.
I genuinely don't know what this game's about. What are the vaults all about?
Okay. So for folks who don't know, and folks who do know, I apologize. I'm going to tell you what I know from Fallout, when I've steeped myself in the Fallout franchise. The vaults are, the year 2077 is the year everything goes to heck in the Fallout universe. Okay. China drops the big ones. They drop the nukes on us. And this company, Vault Tech, had been building out for years vaults for safe havens for people. But the rub is, and what the game kind of makes jape of, and it's cheeky, and that's why you see the vault boy with his fingers out and his thumbs up.
Oh yeah.
Vault Tech to the public is a safe haven. You know, you can come to our vaults and live. But really what Vault Tech doing on the back end is like social experiments. And every vault has like a different twist on how they kind of run and oversee their own civilization contained in the vault. And so different games, different vaults. After the bombs drop, like Fallout 4, for example, they usher in the community and say, "Come in, you know, and come in and be safe in our vault." But really, what they're doing is they're freezing. So they froze the people who came into the vault when they said they're just going to disinfect them, like step into this chamber and get disinfected. But really, they froze them and you wake up 200 years later.
They didn't read the TOS before they hit that check mark.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Vault Tech writes the TOS and, you know, they got government money and it's like there's a lot to be found in the terminals, like the written out once you find out, like as a vault dweller and you're coming out of the vault, you find out that like Vault Tech screwed over a lot of people. And, you know, it's kind of the same in every vault in every game. It's a little different for everybody.
Are they experimenting on the people that they froze in the vaults too?
No, but because only this, the experiment was the freezing of the people, because not every vault freezes the people. That just happens in Vault 111.
Okay.
In Vault 80 or whatever from Fallout 3, it's like a little it's like chaos theory. Like they have a little civilization, yeah, but they introduce a little bit of a twist in every vault to see.
Oh, because they, don't know how dead the earth is going to be, right? So they have like people waking up at different times. Now, how big are the vaults? Because in my mind, I'm thinking like a
big
tractor trailer storage tank thing. Whatever.
Yeah, no, I mean no. It's like
They're huge.
They're huge. There's hundreds of people.
Like a shopping mall. Hospital
in some mall. Yeah, that would.
Wow. Oh, see, that totally changes everything. I was imagining like a tin can, like a human sized tin can of beans. Yeah. You know,
it's neat. It's neat. And, you know, but you still have your first person point of view gameplay and, it's, I don't know.
Like
I love
survival
it.
Collecting stuff, right?
Yeah. It's action RPG. It's survival.
Are there monsters that you have to kill?
Yeah, if you want to. Not in the vault, but out in the wasteland.
Oh, yeah, you said raiders and things.
There's raiders, there's like, you know, huge mosquitoes and super mutants and death claws. There's a lot of stuff, Chuck. It's a heck of a game.
Fallout 4.
And I just want to play it right now. I haven't played it in years. Maybe a year or two.
Are they due for another one? Or did they make 76 and they're just still?
They're still rolling on 76. So there's no word on a new Fallout, especially with Starfield and new Elder Scrolls. But
Starfield, that game's never coming out.
I know. First quarter, huh? First half, right?
Yeah, sure. Bethesda,
right.
Dale, I'm gonna send you a picture in Zoom, or no, not Zoom, Discord. Because I don't know if you noticed, I've been obsessing over my hair while we've been recording.
Yeah, I have.
There's
noticed.
Only one person that I cannot get this person out of my head when I look at myself in the camera. Okay, and it's this guy. You see the guy with his hair parted on the side?
Oh man!
Every time I'm brushing my teeth, that's all I see is that guy from Hootie and the Blowfish. I believe he's the drummer.
Oh, boy. So what came first? The inspiration by seeing this guy, or is your hair falling this naturally and all you can think about is this guy?
I think I had the middle part is like the natural thing and I was hating it.
Yeah.
And it's hard to say chicken or egg because as I was doing it, I was like, I'm thinking of that guy. It's because he's the guy in my brain that has this hair part.
Yeah. Yeah.
And it was very distinct when I would watch those Hootie videos, the way his hair would flop around. So,
you know, long ago, before I worked at the Camelot Music, Chuck, I would shop at the Camelot Music. Yeah. And one time I was like, I'm going to get like a band shirt from Camelot, you know, but out of all the band shirts I could have gotten at the time, I opted for a Hootie at the Blowfish shirt because of the graphic, because of the logo.
Not because you were like a big Hootie guy.
Right. Exactly. I knew the singles.
Cool.
I knew the two or three singles, but I was I'm such a goofball when it comes to big, gaudy graphic tees that I need to be unique. I need to be like, notice me in my funny logo shirt that takes up my whole chest.
That shirt, do you still have it? It's probably worth like $600.
No, my God. It probably didn't fit me when I bought it because I'm so fat constantly in my life.
What was the Camelot card? Didn't they have a frequent chopper card? They do stamps or clips or something.
Yeah. Yeah, they did actually. And when I first started there, they were like hardcore phasing that out. It was the rewards. It was Camelot rewards or something. I'm looking for the Blowfish shirt right now so I can send to you.
Oh my God.
And maybe I find it. And maybe if folks in the Discord ask after.
Well, while you do that, I just found an image of the Camelot repeat performer card, and it's it just took me back.
Didn't make you? I mean, that thing had such a hold on people for obvious reasons, because, you know, oh my God.
Yeah.
I didn't think I would shudder until
I know you that just you heard me. I was like, oh my God, Dale, there's two of them, $10 on eBay right now. We could each have one.
My God.
$5 shipping. Is it worth it?
Oh my God. Is that worth it? It might be worth it. Thank you, Kofi supporters in advance. I can't find the shirt right now, but that's okay.
We're gonna keep looking.
You know why I can't find it, Chuck?
Why?
Because it was such a unique image that I knew I had to have it draped on my body, because nobody 25 years later would see.
Was it like their? It wasn't their logo.
No, that's the thing. It wasn't. It was like a rainbow fish. It was a big. It was like a big round fish in the shape of a rainbow. Fish. Yeah. I guess it would be a blowfish. Now that I think about it, it would be a
blowfish.
But I'm not seeing it, and we can't sync more live time, if you catch my meaning. This is dead air. I know you do.
But you know what I'm gonna do? This shop opened up in the next town over recently. It's only t-shirts from the 90s, basically. At $500 prices, it's insane.
Oh yeah, I know those kinds.
Dale,
oh my God, Chuck. What if I had boots on the ground to the next town over? What if I had a direct line to somebody who could go to that store and try to find that shirt to fit my big ace?
It's hard to get Hootie out of my head.
So I mean, we could talk about Prime Target.
In all seriousness, I'm continuing my Kingdom journey. I finished series 2 and I started the Kingdom Exodus, which is the 30 years later, like, they did
the series.
And three eps into that. It's awesome.
Is it like, does it invoke callback to the original? That kind of thing.
So they have some characters come back. But they do, you know, they have a lot of new characters, but it's in the same hospital and it's shot very similarly. It's cool though, because it's like, it's a very 90s presentation of a show, like the original. So it's like, yeah, I don't know. But it's still fantastic. I'm cracking up a lot. Get that. Great. Get your Mubi subscriptions.
Yeah.
I already went over my 7 days. I thought I could cram it all in. So I paid for it.
You got charged.
Yeah, you got me. I'm not giving in. I'm fighting my ADHD, Dale, every night. I'm like, no. I want to watch an Ed Wood movie tonight. No. I need to finish Kingdom.
Yeah.
I'm committing to it. So yeah, that's where I'm at. But yeah, David Heavener. Let's get into the mind of David Heavener, Dale.
Hold on. I think I found it.
Oh, red alert.
I was completely wrong until I saw it. There is a blowfish on it, but that wasn't the crux of the shirt. I found it.
Isn't it amazing how our mind changes things?
Yeah. It's like, are you ready? Do you want to see it?
Send it. I'm. My breath is.
It's so mortally stupid.
Moist.
Here we go, Chuck. What's your sign?
What's my sign? Oh my God!
See how unique this shirt is?
Oh my God! You know why this is a hard to find shirt? Because Dr. Seuss probably sued their asses.
Yeah,
look at that fish.
Yes, it's lifted right from. I mean, wow, somebody had to buy this shirt from Camelot Music.
What's your sign? Was this a Camelot exclusive? Is that why?
No, but look how unique it is. They don't sell this shirt everywhere.
Look at this eBay seller getting the measuring tape out. That's hardcore.
Yeah, that's when you know they're selling real vintage.
Yeah. It's only $40, too.
You think I, Chuck, well, you think I...
Gonna, he should jump on it. How do you feel about an XL?
I feel like a fat guy in a little XL. Get it.
I've recently accepted that I'm back up to XLs now, after being a large man.
Sorry, buddy.
Yeah.
That sucks, dude.
No, it's good. I look better in the XLs. I admit it.
Good.
Wow, Dale. I can see why this stuck in your mind and you were like, you gravitated toward, you're like, this is a unique shirt.
Yeah. Yeah.
Ladies are going to come running through the food court.
Anarchy.
Who is that guy?
Right?
Yeah, it covers the gamut. Yeah, peace sign, anarchy, smiley face. What is that, an ankh? Is that what that's called, Dale?
Yep.
Recycle symbol. Ecology. Hey, that's 90s. Very cool. You got the male and female sign and the yin yang and the Dr. Seuss fish and the Hootie and the Blowfish. What is that? A ticket? Is that a candy wrapper in the middle there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Great question.
Darius Rucker.
Darius has probably never seen this shirt before. That's how unique this shirt is.
Yeah. He has no idea.
He doesn't know. Who would know? And what does this have to do with Hootie and the Blowfish? Who cares, right, Dale? Let's spend money at Camelot Music. Let's probably spend $25 on this thing. That's probably $16.
At the company store, too.
Who cares? Because you're going to wear that thing. And people are going to question what the F is going on in your mind.
I'm just picturing you like at the community pool. Wearing your What's Your Sign shirt, doing the cock and the walk, you know?
Yeah. Swimming in it because I won't take my shirt off in public.
Oh, damn, dude.
You know?
That got me.
Too real.
I know that. Mm.
Can we move on?
Let's move on. Come on. Let's get into heaven.
Can we move on, Chuck? Please.
Get into heaven.
So you want to go away, do you?
Yes, I do.
We'll have a nice trip.
Dale, we watched 1991's Prime Target, written, directed, produced, and somewhat scored by one David Heavener. Okay. Prime Target is about, I'm doing this off the cuff. I did not write this down. It's about, you know,
can I insert the first note I have?
Please.
When you ask what it's, when you describe what it's about.
Yeah.
His body. My first note.
His kind of awkward, hairy body. Skinny. Mm-hmm. Skinny boy. Skinny hunk. He doesn't carry himself in like a normal Hollywood 90s macho way that you would expect. All right, we'll get into that. But David Heavener, let me bring up. Who does he play? Oh, how could I forget his name? David Heavener stars as John Bloodstone. He's a cop in Texas. He's just trying to live his life. He's trying to get back together with his wife. He's mad that he's always late for dinner. His boss, Isaac Hayes, is always up his A because of Bloodstone's unconventional methods to kill bad guys when the situation calls for it. He has a it's a Magnum 44. They don't call it out, but it is a giant handgun he uses.
You could stick your middle finger in that barrel of that gun.
Some shots this gun, it looked like they welded on an extra length on the end of it. It was insane. So yeah,
that's what you call a custom piece. It's a custom
piece. So he's almost losing his job. He owes the bank money for his mortgage. They want money now. They need 25 G's now or else you're losing your house. When all of a sudden the FBI swoops into town, offers him this sweet gig, they're going to pay him off the books, the money he needs for his house. If he escorts a mob guy, played by Tony Curtis, from one place to another, point A and B. Okay. Protect him, drive him. That's all you got to do. But, you know, this is not, Dale, the world's not black and white, no matter what people tell you.
You said it. You said it, dude.
There's a lot of people who are after this mob guy. And there's some people who are after David Hebner, too. And they're all, you don't know who's the good and who's bad. Well, here's a hint. Everyone's bad, except Isaac Hayes, I think. That's it. John Bloodstone, you know, he's a man that he doesn't play by anyone's rules but his. You know, his moral compass is true. When everyone else is, you know, they're trying to play by the rules set in Washington, you know? But he knows what's real and American and true, you know? So this is your prime target, John Bloodstone.
I like to think when you started talking about Chuck, his body, you know?
Yeah.
It's something I thought a lot about ever since watching this movie. You're right. He is like, and now it's wrong to describe it this way, but it's like he's like a man's man. He's like, and I know I talked about it last week, and shares a commonality with Jenny Lee Harrison, who's in one of my favorite movies, Tank, with James Garner. He has a James Garner-esque body. He's not he's not chiseled and supposed to be walking around with a shirt off for today's camera, for what society views as a perfect body. But he's like a guy with a sweet ass. He's like Walt Longmire. He's got Walt Longmire's body.
It's accurate for the day and probably for now anyway. You know, it's like, you know,
yeah, I
mean, we don't need to get into standards of men in current day society, but you know, you see the Hollywood hunks now, they gotta, you know, they spend 90% of their lives in a gym to look like that.
Mm-hmm.
David Hebner is just a guy, you know,
it's just a guy. He's got a sweet body, he's got very little body fat, and
he's got
he's good at his job.
He's got no emotion in his face, just stone flat.
Hey, it's what the job requires of it, right? I mean,
yeah. And he's got that cool, what kind of hat is this he's wearing? How do you describe this thing? It's like what Bret Michaels wears from Poison.
I don't know what it is.
You know?
It's a mesh hat, yeah. It's hot.
It's hot in Texas. I didn't cover the other aspect of this movie that's very important. It's like a it's almost like a Richard Pryor, Gene Wilder movie, where you got two opposites chained together on the road.
Yeah,
there's that aspect to this movie that I found
and
quite funny.
God love Tony Curtis and David Hebner for this match made
this match
in heaven.
Comedic duo of 1991. What did
Tony
they win
Curtis.
A VMA for this, or what was the MTV Movie Awards? Did they win a Moon Man for this best duo?
They should have, because some genuinely good moments,
like when Tony Curtis is chained to the toilet in the motel room, and the guy comes in to kill him, but David Hebner's in the toilet on the opposite side of the wall. And he just shoots through the wall and kills the guy. And then he runs around and sees Tony Curtis. Tony Curtis looks at the holes in the wall. He goes, "Who's going to pay for the holes in that wall?"
Gold.
Do you think he ad-libbed that, Dale? Do you think that was in the script? Or Tony Curtis brought that?
I think
holes
Tony brings that
line.
Yeah.
I think why you get Tony Curtis, right?
That's why you hire Tony Curtis. No doubt in my mind.
Yeah.
I think the... his funniest bit was when they come across the the lakefront beach and a man and a woman porking next to a canoe, and he says, "Handcuff me to the girl."
Tony Curtis, horniest mob boss.
Oh God, he was so gentle. Like he was the best. He was like your best friend mob boss, not the intimidating, awful mob boss.
Yeah. David, he should have just taken the money. Like, David Hevener turns down several bribes to let him go. He should have just done it. You know, this guy's a gem, Tony Curtis. My favorite thing, Melissa walked in the room while I was watching this.
Why, they were porking?
And she sees, she sees Tony Curtis. She starts swooning. She's like, oh, Tony Curtis. I love Tony Curtis. And she like sits on my lap and watches like 10 seconds of it. And it's the scene where the girl in the bikini drives by them. And Tony Curtis says, did you see the gazebos on that girl?
Right.
Melissa was thought it was the funniest. She died. She's been repeating that line all day.
She's walking around the house talking to Dave right now, probably.
Gazebos, yeah. You see the gazebos on that lady?
Do you think that's when, you know, after that line came out, do you think he said, can we run that again? Can I say gazebos right? And they kept it in anyway? Because Hevener, you know, was like one cut kind of guy.
I know. You got to wonder if, like, it's Hevener's script, like, how do you go into that situation? Like, okay, I wrote this movie. I directed it.
Right.
But you're hiring Tony Curtis, Hollywood royalty. You're going to tell Tony Curtis what to do? You're going to tell him you're saying his line's wrong?
I know.
You're going to stand up to Tony Curtis when he says,
yeah, that's true.
Hey, instead of breasts, how about I say gazebos?
Right. And he probably meant to say like gazangas, but they came out wrong. But it came out wrong. But Hevener was not going to challenge.
You can't. It's probably in his contract. Yeah, it was. You can't challenge him.
No challenging Tony Curtis.
It's Tony Curtis.
The whole shoot of the movie.
Some Like It Hot, for God's sakes.
Speaking of Some Like It Hot, okay. Mm-hmm. Since I was a young boy watching Tank.
Oh God! Let's get into
Jenny,
it.
With Jenny Lee Harrison, town whore.
Now, did she play Mrs. Bloodstone in this?
Yes.
Okay.
And for the first time in my life, through Three's Company, through Tank, I got to bear witness to Jenny Lee Harrison's breasts.
Wow!
I feel like.
And we get a
cremate me now and stick me on the mantle.
We got a continuous shot.
Cremate me and pour me into concrete that you would to create an artificial reef in the ocean because I'm done.
I can't believe how long you held off for me saying all my stupid whack stuff for you to talk about these gazebos that you saw.
Oh yeah, no, it was a bullet point in my notes, so this I would have gotten back to Dale. It.
Oh my God, I'm ashamed that I didn't realize what was happening.
No, when I it's watched okay. That scene. Yeah, you probably just didn't think like, oh my God, Dale's melting into a puddle and ruining his lazy boy over there because he's like the lazy boy now looks like it was covered in a peach colored wax.
Human and iced tea.
Yeah, we need to tread lightly here before it gets misconstrued. Okay.
God, I'm very happy for you.
Thank you, Chuck.
Lucky David Hevener. God.
But what I enjoyed and what that line where, you know, first of all, the stress that I feel. David Hevener is police, okay? He doesn't have a 9-to-5. So when she's angry at him, this is every movie, right? So there is a bit of truth that comes from a police wife being frustrated with the husband never around.
If it wasn't true, they wouldn't put it in movies, Dale.
And so we're immediately feel for David Hevener. And she says, don't you think you're just going to come in here and lay me down and make love to me when she's that mad at him? She's spitting fire.
And no, and even David Hevener's acting in that scene where you have no idea that we're supposed to know, oh yeah, they are going to go have sex right now. because his face does not tell a story, Dale. This guy is the best poker player. He's a world champion poker player because you cannot get a read on this guy of what's going on in that noggin at all.
Well, after what happened to his partner 5 years ago.
That's true.
You know, why even show any emotion whatsoever? It's going to get somebody killed.
Did they, that scene where he tells his teary-eyed how his partner died story around the campfire with cans of beans, which I assume was all that stuff was in that canoe, by the way, that they stole.
Yeah, they were probably canoe camping, as they call it on Reddit.
Canoodling. handcuff me to that Goyle. But what was I saying? His teary-eyed story. That scene just seemed so... Do you think it was a challenge to shoot? Because it just felt so... Yeah. There was no lead-up. There was no Tony Curtis like asking him anything. It was just like kind of out of nowhere. We cut to him basically in the middle of the story, crying, telling how his partner died. And then we cut out of it.
Yeah, it was in your mind. You need to build up to that point where as soon as you see the tears, you're like, well, they must have been having some frank conversations and Tony must have asked him off camera.
Yeah.
They probably had like a sponge beach bucket and in Sharpie it said Heaven Earth Tears on that bucket just off camera. So somebody could come up and slap him in the face with a wet sponge. It's probably David himself because he's not behind the camera.
Sponges, right?
Oh, yeah, it's big, like holds a lot of water.
Yeah.
Big soppy 2 gallons bastard.
Of water in that sponge, yeah.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
But what, you know... $25,000 he's got to raise in a week and a half to $25,000
too.
Yeah. Like
also was that was his second mortgage on that palace with that all that that land?
That was the cleanest driveway I've ever seen. That was brand new.
They put it in 2 days ago. He probably spent that second mortgage on that driveway.
That driveway cost $35,000 min.
And what were they growing? Do you see he was like growing crops or something too?
Yeah, he did not. Yeah. And the driveway kept going past the house. Like, was that to the barn and all the farm equipment in the back?
I know.
That they're behind on the
he must the be Kubota paying like payments. Day laborers, right? To run this home.
He's probably paying them on credit. That's why he's, you know, like he is suffering.
Yeah. He's trying to start his soybean crop.
And you know what the problem is, Chuck?
What?
Guess what happens after he pays off the $25,000 in a week and a half? He's still got a mortgage payment. He's still got laborers to pay. Like it's not over. The nightmare's not over.
The amount of money he kept turning down and he was just like, oh, I only need $25,000. Because he's an honest Texan. You know?
Yeah, John Law.
Yeah. Isaac Hayes, his boss, even offered him some money. He's like, no, I'll take handouts.
I made a note of that. He says he has a few bucks he could loan out.
Yeah.
If I got hit with a $25,000 bill, I would probably set myself on fire.
I know.
Who's got that kind of money to lend out to people?
I know. I certainly wouldn't have the stone face that David Hefner has in that situation.
Oh, I would be, yes, I would be concerned. I wouldn't be able to have a conversation with anybody.
I'd look like I got hit by a sponge.
Yes. Yeah, right.
Dale, are you on the Prime Target IMDb page by chance? The poster on there is hilarious because it's implying a totally different story than what the movie is about.
Oh my God.
Like I would be mad if I rented this.
Who was the guy behind the girl?
Yeah, I don't know. It looks like It looks like the guy from a time travel show, Sam.
Who's the girl?
I thought that was Jenny Lee Harrison, but I don't know.
That looks like Natasha Henstridge or something.
Kind of does.
And Isaac Hayes looks like the main player in this. He looks like the villain.
Yeah.
I need to change my... I need to change my...
Can anyone protect her with a target over this girl's face?
Shit.
Not this movie. This is not the right movie.
That's 10 seconds of the end of the movie.
When oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah.
When the ugliest police commissioner on record with this... I mean, this police commissioner's cheekbones were like... two balloons surgically implanted into his cheeks.
Oh my God. Oh, this commissioner. Okay. I know this guy, Andrew Robinson. What is he from? Is he was he in Castle Freak? Is that where I know him from? God, the amount of stuff he's in. Let me see if Castle. Oh, he's in Hellraiser. He's Larry.
Oh, I think, you know what? I think Dirk Feelgood loves this guy. Dirk, you got to watch this movie.
Yeah, Dirk, you got to watch this movie.
He was talking about this guy on movie mixtape, I believe.
Holy shit, he's in Cobra too? I mean, that was the other thing that was running through my mind was like David Heavener's favorite movie is Cobra because like the opening is very Cobra.
It's Dirty Harry. Man, this guy's all over the place.
Yeah. Guess he's not in, when did Castle Freak come out? Like early 90s, right?
Yeah, I want to say 92 or 93.
I must be getting it mixed up with somebody else. Yeah.
Dirk, wow. Dirk making a connection with us right now.
Dirk, can you feel this? And wait a second. Agent Harrington, played by Robert, that was not the Brady Bunch Robert Reed, was it?
Yeah. Yeah, that was
him?
Yeah.
No, it wasn't. I did not recognize him.
You didn't recognize his voice?
No. Oh, my God. My mind. I mean, I know what he died from. Maybe he was ill. At the time,
maybe he was just older, Chuck. I mean, people get older. He didn't look like he was suffering to me. He wasn't like gaunt and hairless.
When did he die? Dale, he died in 1992. I'll have you know.
Maybe he was on his way out. He might
be suffering.
Oh, God.
Good gravy. There's so much. We got Don Stroud from, this is how we got to this movie, right? Don Stroud played the bank robber that had the hostages in the beginning.
Yep.
That David Heavener got a flamethrower and a car with the windshield busted out and drove through this building and then lit the bank robbers on fire. I think two out of the three of them. And then chased Don Stroud up on the roof and shot him with his giant pistol.
Yeah, the flamethrower bit, my goodness, was a lot.
Like he brought it with him from home.
Yeah, that was like, that's like murder.
That's straight up murder.
Yeah, that's murder with some other counts of like other things.
Yeah.
Like vicious murder. If there's a vicious murder count, then that's
like
definitely that.
A gun would have gotten the job done, but he wanted to burn them alive instead.
I noticed a subtle theme running through this movie. Yeah. And it's subtle, Chuck, but okay. once you kind of like become aware of possible, you know, messaging that David Heavener would like to send a person. Okay. Stuck on the front of Isaac Hayes' desk was a DARE sticker.
I saw that.
And then David Heavener tearingly reveals to Tony Curtis that his partner Dick died because somebody was strung out on PCP.
That's right. Now this made me think of the Blues Brothers when Frank Oz says, "This is PCP. You see what this does to kids?" As a police officer in that. And it made me think, wow, was PCP, this was like the boogeyman drug at the time. Like,
yeah,
I think PCP eclipsed crack as the drug that was so, it's like fentanyl today. Fentanyl's the big one now. That's
yeah,
the big scary one.
One drop, one dust.
We'll send you into psychosis. Yeah.
That was Trading Places, by the way, Chuck.
Oh my God. Send me to jail. I'm sorry.
It's okay. Yeah.
But yeah, you're right. You're right.
Yeah. PCP was the enemy of this movie.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. It all comes down to that. It's the drugs flown over that Texas border, Dale.
Mm-hmm. So even back then, you know, David Heavener was on a mission to kind of get the word out.
War on drugs, baby.
Mm-hmm.
It's an industry.
Probably got funded. Probably got like half the movie's budget from DARE. Yeah.
CIA probably paid for this. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh.
Hey, that's all unclassified. I'm not speaking out of school.
Wow. My DARE officer in Bacon School, Officer Sammons, was arrested for stealing computer equipment from the public school.
Wait, your school officer wasn't called Officer Friendly like every cop in my school?
No, it was Officer Sammons. I remember. Yeah.
They pulled this weird thing in my school district. Every cop, no matter who it was that would come in to talk or hang out at the school, was named Officer Friendly.
Wow.
And it took me a long time to realize that was not their real names. And I was like, why are they doing this? This is so strange.
Oh, man.
Like they're all James Bond? I don't get it. So Tony Curtis, I just want like, God, I would love to hear him talk about this, mm-hmm. this experience. Like,
was he
just holding it in? Like, was he angry this whole thing? Or was he a team player? Was he a professional? Was he like, all right, I'm here.
Like
you paid me. I'm going to do what you want.
Like, this is my job.
Like, did he want to strangle David Heavener when he's trying to be funny in this car with David Heavener, throwing lines back and forth? Was he just angry that Heavener just wouldn't give him anything, just nothing to work with?
Even the line, I didn't write it down, but it was David Heavener started drinking from a flask.
Yeah.
And the line he let out was the unfunniest, stupidest line in his country twang. It made it even worse. But I was like, this is the lame, like you're giving Tony Curtis nothing.
Tony Curtis is like, he's laying it all in the field. That's what they say. Like
they say in the business.
When you watch him in this, you're like, all right, he's giving them Tony Curtis. He's not mailing this in, but I couldn't help but transpose an inner rage that he was upset that he was in this.
He was probably felt like he was, a prisoner in the back of a car, handcuffed. And like, he probably needed an outlet and he didn't have it. I mean, he was so hilarious and it was so just funny. One-sided. It was amazing. God, it was amazing.
Something ain't right.
What are you going to do about it?
What am I going to do about it? What do you mean, what am I going to do about
it? Listen, you better do something about it.
It's not my fault.
Because when this is over, I'm going to hang your ass.
I'm the one transporting you. You're
what
not
are you talking about?
If it wasn't for you, we wouldn't be in this.
Is this what you call transporting? This is bent over a truck. I don't know who the sheriff is, do you?
It's really funny watching like someone like him in a movie like this and you're just like, wow, yeah, like he is just magnetic. Like there's no denying it. He just has a presence.
Yeah.
God. I know we're goofing on the dialogue, but there are some great, hilarious lines in this. I think one of my favorites is Heavener when he's talking to the commissioner and the FBI guys on the phone towards the end of the movie. And he's like, and they're like, you're going to bring him in right now, talking about Tony Curtis. And he's like,
I'll tell you what, Bloodstone, we'll double it. No, triple it. You name your price. You just give us Capella. What do you say?
Oh, I'm going to give you Capella.
Oh, yeah, I'm going to bring him in. And I'm going to bring him in right up your butt.
God, it was so good. Yes, you're right. Oh man, I remember being so angry at that stupid car. Like, Why call him in the first place? If you're going to bring him in, like, your job is to get them. Don't tell them that you're out in front of the courthouse.
They're not going to kill you in the courthouse. Just walk them in. You're right there.
Yeah. Just like they think you're off the grid somewhere. Why call them?
I mean, maybe it's because he still wanted to get his money and that's how he, but they weren't going to bring, there was no check. Like, did he get his money?
Oh, these three criminals weren't going to sign off on his check.
What the hell?
It was, and you know what else infuriated me about City Hall, about the courthouse?
Mm-hmm.
It was David Heavener, Tony Curtis, and the three criminals. There's no press. There's no jury. There's no judge going back from recess. Like, to
it
get
must
this,
have been Sunday.
Like, why isn't it like not like a My Blue Heaven? Everybody is waiting in front of this courthouse to see if this criminal makes it to the stand.
Thank you, My Blue Heaven. And the sniper on the roof, the FBI could only conjure up one sniper. Well, the sniper happened to be one of David Evner's coworkers, who we thought was a good guy. But
yeah,
if you thought there was any good guys around working in law enforcement,
it was this guy. Yeah.
David Evner's the only good one, and Isaac Hayes. Did you see that truck blowing up?
I was surprised by that.
Like,
Isaac Hayes is like, you go over there and start that truck and bring it here. Like, go
after
over there
the
and start the truck.
Like, had his gun on Bloodstone. That was super awkwardly staged. Like, he like started to like he was gonna arrest Bloodstone, and then Isaac Hayes was like, go start the truck.
I know.
Okay, what?
Like, I didn't understand who was dirty. I thought everybody was dirty at that point. Like,
yeah.
Isaac Hayes is like, don't make us do this, Bloodstone. Don't make us do what? Don't make us kill you because we're in the pocket of the evil FBI guys?
I think Isaac Hayes was like he was being the useful idiot. He didn't know. Like, he just was going to bring Bloodstone in. But he didn't know, like, the truck was rigged to blow. Whatever.
Go start that truck.
I can't believe I'm explaining it to you.
And they're in the middle of the desert. they drove the truck all the way out there without exploding. Or is that where the bomb truck is parked?
I don't know.
We shouldn't pick it apart because this is an awesome movie. We should.
But I do love. Like I loved when he called Isaac Hayes. Was like, I need one of the trucks from the. What department was it? It was like the SWAT. I don't know what
it's
department.
It's like the bomb unit.
The bomb unit. I need like one of their heavy trucks, and I need a bunch of ammo. And I love when he showed up, and Isaac, he's like, here's your ammo. It's just like a palm full of bullets, I guess, that you would never see. And I was like,
it's like wrapped up in a paper towel.
He didn't really specify which ammo or how much.
Yeah.
I guess he just wanted a couple, because that's what it looked like.
It was like he got a piece of, it's like the brown paper towel you get from public buildings and offices.
Yeah.
And he just wrapped his bullets up in that brown paper towel. So he didn't like lose them in his pocket.
He gave him two bullets and he was going to be like, well, you said some.
Right. I didn't know how much you wanted. Did you want a truck full? Did you want 100?
Who's going to pay for those holes?
Yeah.
Oh, before we wrap this up though, Dale. So I think there's three or four songs that are David Heavener. That was the other great thing is like, you're listening to David Heavener's voice through the whole movie. And then David Heavener will get in the car, turn on the radio, and the country song playing is David Heavener singing.
Oh yeah.
Even like then, the only music in this world, in this universe is David Heavener.
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. I didn't even put that together.
Yeah,
that is absolutely true.
Yeah. But the main song that that plays at the beginning and the end credits is Honky Tonk Man, Dale. This song was something else.
Well, I just put on my best cologne and I smell like $1 million. My jeans are tight, my hair's just right as I jump in my pickup truck. I got four on the floor and a can of Coors here in my hand. I'm on a honky tonk all night long, so I'm a honky tonk man. I'm a honky tonk man. Honky-Tonk Man.
It was almost hip-hop country, like what's big right now. Because it was like a... It was like an electronic beat, and David, like, he wasn't singing. He was like, it was almost like that U2 song where the Edge talks. It was almost like that. Like, I'm a honky tonk man, yes. But with a twang, you know?
Yeah. God, that's exactly what this movie needed.
Yeah.
As it turns out, they didn't need an Isaac Hayes song. You know? Oh, I mean, God.
What are you going to do? You have David Heavner already. Like,
that's true. What are you going to pay Isaac extra? David's doing this for free.
Maybe Isaac was only, he was this acting phase where he was like, oh, no, I don't do that anymore.
Mm-hmm. God. This movie was amazing. I mean, if his other movies are like this, then it's gold.
I know. I was a little like, because it's a Troma-owned movie.
Yeah.
I saw it like there, and I was like, oh no, is this a Troma movie? But it's clearly one of the ones that they just like bought after it was made or whatever.
I got scared of that in the beginning. I was like, oh, what did I pick?
But yeah. Oh, also, I love the opening. This is my favorite way that movies from the 80s and 90s open, is of a man waking up late to a voicemail from somebody annoying him. Surrounded by like beer bottles and stuff.
Yeah.
I love that. We don't get that anymore, because it's not cool to be slobby anymore. I miss that in movies. I just wanted to say that.
I guess he wasn't sleeping at home. That wasn't his home bedroom. That was like
was he in a hotel? That was very confusing. Because he was listening to his messages too, right? From his wife.
Oh, yeah.
So where was he?
Where was he? Did he have his own apartment? His own police apartment? Wow.
Man.
I don't know, but it was the feel-good moment of the year was when he got to redeem himself, because Jenny Lee knew the code that partners are supposed to do.
Yeah.
When they give the code to step out of the way in 3 seconds. And it was amazing.
Oh my God.
That was like Redemption City right there.
I was impressed that I was impressed by David Hevener's script, that he imparted that during his tearful story of that situation. Because that's kind of a complicated thing to say, I think.
Yeah.
And he did a good job boiling it down.
So we knew, so we understood what the heck he was trying to say, yeah. And she knew it, man, because Jenny Lee is the queen. Goddamn.
Yeah. How about that jean skirt she was wearing, Dale?
Oh, Jesus. Please.
I'm a honky tonk man.
Mm. What a treat. Prime target.
That was
target.
A great pick, Dale. That was.
I couldn't help but buy it. For $3, I bought it.
Did you?
It's with me forever now on Amazon Prime Video.
This is one I would love. I mean, I think there needs to be some sort of David Hevener retrospective where his movies are rescanned, cleaned up, and a nice set. Because he's got it, kid. He's got something. He's got it.
He's got it. All right. Yeah, you'd probably need to sign off. You know, you'd need him to sign off or to acknowledge that these movies exist, I think.
Yeah.
You know? I don't know.
Now I'm feeling pressure about picking the next movie, because I kind of want to keep this thing going where you go through the cast and pick someone. I've always wanted to secretly do that on the show, but I never do it.
That's tough.
But anyway. Dale, do we have any listener feedback?
Well, folks, listener feedback, batandspiderpod@gmail.com. You can email us there. You can call the official Bat and Spider hotline at 315-544-0966. Is that right? I think that's right. This week we do not have anything, but please, we're going to throw that out there and send us your feedback whenever you can, your emails, your letters, voicemails. So even more pressure, Chuck.
Wow. I was hoping I would get a little cushion here.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I know. Jenny Lee Harrison, I want you beside me. Jenny Lee Harrison, watch a movie with me that Chuck picks.
All right, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to go to my watch list because it's not working out.
Jenny Lee Harrison, come sit next to me. Listen to that Stabbing Westward album that we both loved at the time, I'm sure.
Oh, man, Stabbing Westward. Love that album.
Jenny Lee Harrison, Chuck's glancing over at his tape collection to see if he's got Stabbing Westward on. One? It's not, but that's a good album. It's not.
I need more Stabbing Westward in my life.
I'm talking about Darkest Days.
Mm.
You're talking about, yes, Wither, Blister, Burn, and Peel.
Yeah.
My darkest days. Look at these EPs from 2020. Hello.
Yeah, they're still out there, huh? Or they're back? I don't know.
Chasing Ghosts? 2022?
Yeah, they're still doing it.
Jenny Lee Harrison, will you go to a Stabbing Westward concert with me and hide in the back somewhere so we don't have to... So we don't have to pretend to love Stabbing Westward as much as the people who probably really love Stabbing Westward.
Wearing our Stabbing Westward, what's your sign t-shirts?
Oh my God, criminal. I should have been locked away in juvie. for some of my choices. While you're picking, Chuck, not to distract you, my first day at Camelot Music. First day on the job, two of my metal friends came in the store, because they were at the mall at the same time, and the one guy I was kind of lesser friends with, he shoplifted a CD right in front of my eyes as I was being trained by the manager. I could see him cracking into the jewel case holder. And I was like, "You fucking kidding me right now?"
God, with friends like these,
yeah.
Nightmare.
As much as I wanted to be that Stabbing Westward album, it probably wasn't.
Okay, I got one. All right, Dale, we're turning the clock back to 1964.
All that already.
And we're watching The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed Up Zombies. ! By Ray Dennis Deckler.
For folks in the back, The Incredibly Strange Creatures Who Stopped Living and Became Mixed-Up Zombies. Yes, that is the name of the movie. She keeps monsters in cages for pets. He preys on wild go-go girls. Okay, I'm writing this down right now. I'm prioritizing this in my watch list. Folks, obviously, it's available on Tubi.
A Tubi. Tubi Army, rise up. It's also on Pluto.
And it is also starring Ray Dennis Steckler.
Yeah, so Mr. Steckler, they just did Severn just did a big box set retrospective of all his movies.
Oh, shit, okay.
And this is probably his most famous one. I'd heard of this one for years. Never seen it, but always wanted to. Sort of a... super low. I think this is his most like closest he got to making a mainstream movie, because all his stuff was very much made at home, you know. That sort of thing.
Okay.
I want to say, I don't want to say DIY because I am sick of hearing that term, but that's what I want to say anyway. But yeah, so let's see what this character is all about, this Ray Dennis Deckler, okay?
I love that suggestion, Chuck.
Okay.
Great pick. Right. The poster is amazing. We're going to get to that next week, folks. Yeah. In the meantime, if you haven't opened Apple iTunes recently or your Spotify, if you listen there, rate us and review us. It helps for exposure a lot. Go to batandspider.com. There you will find invite to Discord, and we are waiting for you to jump into Discord. Yeah. There you will find a link to our Ko-fi page, ko-fi.com/batandspider. That is where you can subscribe. That is where you can show us a little love monetarily if that's what you wish. You unlock secret episodes that way.
Yeah.
And gosh, what else? Follow us on Letterboxd, follow us on Twitter.
Send us hugs and kisses, by passenger pigeon. I don't know.
And give us a little feedback. Give us an email. Send us an email. Send us a voicemail.
Yeah. You know what? You got a question. You got a burning question about movies, about what you should eat for lunch, about whether you should quit your job or not. Mm-hmm. Send it along to us.
Yeah.
You know? We'll do our best to help you out.
Yeah, we got level heads. We got a pretty good head on our shoulders. You know? We do our best. In the meantime, love yourselves, love each other.
That was a good ending, Dale. Love yourselves and love each other. I like that.
Oh, thanks. I'm going to try to remember it then. Thank you.
Wow.
Goodbye.
Good night, Jenny Lee.
Jenny Lee, if you're listening.
Theme song was created by Toby Forsman of Whipsong Music. Find out more at whipsongmusic.com.
This is a Tape Deck podcast.
Did you see the gazebos on that girl? Oh, you were scared shitless. I can't believe what you looked like. You should have seen your face.
I thought I told you to shut up.